there, Rave Radio audience. This is Mark Coxon, the AV Phenom, and welcome to a new podcast called The Kings of Content. We have heard that the content side of the AV business is important, but I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it other than to say it's great. So I wanted to put together a podcast where we talk to some of the folks that are out there pioneering this side of the business. And this week, I leaned on an old friend of mine from a previous life in integration, Timo Korpela with IDEON. How are you, Timo?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great, and I'm excited to have you on today. Like I said, I haven't heard a lot of people in the AV industry talking in detail about content other than to say that it's king and that it's important. So I wanted to make sure I got you on. You and I met when you were at a company called Multitaction, or Multitouch, and you were on the hardware side of the business. Where did you come from in AV, Timo, when you started?
Well, it's really that interactive displays brought me to the AV market. So before that, I used to be in telecommunications, so lots of hardware in that market as well. But the touch displays really brought me to this market, and I learned to understand how the AV market worked very quickly.
Yeah, for good and for bad, right?
Yes.
Yeah, easy enough. So I know that was my first experience with you, was on that side of the business. And that company was a little different in that you did produce a touch product, but you also had a software solution because you guys had an API. Is that where you started to really, I guess, discover the need for better user interfaces in AV?
Yeah, the product has its own technology, and the company created an API, as you mentioned, so that the software developers and content providers could leverage all the cool features that those displays have. But we quickly learned that, you know, it is a market that you pretty much have to create yourself. So there are very few AV products that just build in an API, the content will come. It doesn't work that way at all. So we learned that, and we quickly came to the conclusion that in order for the displays to, really their sales to pick up, we have to have our own content. And we spent a lot of time analyzing the market, different needs, requirements, so forth. What are the key areas in the AV market, especially where there's a gap, there's a need, there's a growth, and so forth? And the company quickly started developing their own set of software in specific markets, of which the collaboration was the number one, and experiences number two.
Sure. And so what then facilitated your move into IDEON?
Lots of other things. So touch displays is obviously just one technology in the AV world. It's filled with technologies both old and new. And the way I saw this is that we are approaching what I call an age of experience. So rather than communicating with devices and handling devices and equipment, we are more and more content kind of driven.
Sure.
And experiences have both the content, software, and the hardware part. So what I see is that those two are kind of converging very quickly, and the product and services the AV industry will sell sooner than later is a combination of both.
Sure, and I think that, you know, if you do a lot of reading, which I do as well, on user experience and on user interface, I wrote a piece a while back called "The App Is Dead." Even though everybody wants to have an app for their device, but the era of someone wanting to go to a device and open up a pretty icon to control one thing and then switch to another pretty icon to control something else are pretty much already gone. I mean, there's not a lot of innovation in that space. And I know a lot of people are writing more about this ambient user experience where, you know, the software environment that you're in recognizes all the hardware that you come into contact with, and you're really in one UI across devices, which is a great concept, but I think we have a ways to go. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's not just kind of the content. It's the experience throughout the experience itself. So I think the end user will be more and more in a very central role when these products are delivered to the market. So it's no longer product that is delivered to the client. It's a solution experience that is delivered to the end user. And that means that there has to be tools and ways to customize that experience, especially to corporate clients where the requirements might be mission critical even.
Sure. So, you know, when I first saw IDN, I saw it based on, I think, a post that was out on LinkedIn about some work you were doing in the virtual reality space. But it looked like, from doing a little more digging, watching the Vimeo videos and things on the IDN website, that you're much more than a VR company. What is IDN's main core goal or purpose?
We implement what we called design thinking. So design thinking is often seen as a concept that is very kind of overall general and something that has very little kind of concrete kind of outcomes out of itself. What we do is that we implement design thinking in companies, processes, products, and experiences in general. So we can talk about products, physical products, or we can talk about IT systems or even virtual reality. We kind of take the end user, he or she is in the middle of it all, and provide the services and content that end user really wants. And the tools can be really different. So you mentioned about virtual reality, which is a great tool for some things, like, you know, education is a great example of that, or big data visualization is a great example of a really great application for virtual reality. But we call the experience first, and the technology is just a way to implement that experience.
Yeah, and I think that's where there's a hard shift sometimes in AV companies that are used to selling from a line card. You know, this is my partner, my hardware partner, and these are the things that I sell. You know, we used to work that circle backwards, right? We shoehorn the client's need into the products we sell, as opposed to looking at what the client's needs are and then trying to develop what they need behind that.
Yeah, I agree with you that there's a gap, but it's not like there's a Grand Canyon between the user and the AV integrator. The AV integrators have a relationship with clients that, you know, go to 20 years and decades.
Sure.
So the AV integrators actually know the clients really, really well. So it is a couple, you know, matter of two things, really. Just listening to the client, which they can do, you know, already really well. And then, you know, while listening, implementing something that is now that can be modified to the client needs, instead of just reselling something that suppliers provide to the integrators.
Sure. So do you think it's more of just a realizing what's possible challenge? You know, as an integrator, sometimes maybe you were handcuffed to hardware and you really had to coach the client on what the limitations were, because it just wasn't possible to go out there and create the custom solution they needed. So you had to make sure that you listened and then just patch them into the thing that was the closest to what you could provide. Do you think that's changing now? Do you think?
Yeah, I think it has changed a little bit. If you look at the past, the process was very linear.
Yes.
That you just had the equipments that delivered a certain experience and that's it. So it was, you know, obviously the integrators are experts in that and know how it works and so forth. So very little customization was needed. Nowadays, it's more about the software. So sure. What people are seeing, they are not seeing that box that runs everything. They are seeing what's on the screen or screens or whatever is the kind of the user interface for this content. So it has changed. And while the client is seeing something, there's a very kind of small step of asking something extra too. So can I have that, or can I have that other thing? So another thing. So that has changed quite a bit because of just that only.
Yeah, I think that's true too. I think it's more one of these things that we've reached a point where we actually have the ability to start bridging all these things together, maybe in a way that we haven't before. And we just need a little bit of, I guess, software glue in between the two to get them up and running.
Yeah, and it's much simpler than it seems. So basically, you know, in the past, the software products were often shrink-wrapped kind of things that were monolith by themselves. So they were software, but they were boxes like the hardware part as well. Yeah. Whereas nowadays, especially with the emergence of web applications and everything, a lot of customization can be done with a very small budgets.
Sure.
I think the issue most of the time is that, you know, if you do this type of customization, you just don't have the end user kind of input to the process. And what happens is that often what is delivered is not exactly what the client needed. And I think that's the biggest issue right now, rather than availability of tools.
Gotcha. So it's the process. And so that sounds like that's what sets IDN apart, right? I mean, we do some design thinking at Milestone. When we do product, new product development, or when we do our sales meetings and stuff, we use D-School. So, you know, we have boxes of pipe cleaners and all sorts of notepads, and we do rapid prototyping with, you know, fun materials. And, you know, we kind of think in that, if I could, I wish I could, I wish I could change, I like now, you know, we use those terms, and that's the way we start to come to, I guess, a new idea of the product that we want to develop or the process that we want to implement. It sounds like, you know, design thinking is alive and well at IDN too, huh?
Yeah, it is. And IDN was actually created as a user research company, so that the user is part of the company's DNA, very much so. So that's why we have all the tools, expertise, and capacity to go to the potential and prospective users and ask the right questions and come up with the right type of wireframes and also prototyping. So we also believe in kind of fast prototype and agile development. But what we do is that we have kind of made it an art in a sense that with iteration, we can come up with quick results and provide the output that our clients and the end users eventually were looking for in the first place.
That's great. So, I mean, with that, you know, you have this relationship with the end users and you're in there doing the design thinking and you come up with this kind of landscape of what the experience needs to look like. And then you work that backwards towards the technology. When you're working that backwards towards technology, what do you guys go out and partner with AV integrators and with other hardware partners? I mean, how does that interface work once you start to dial this back into how are we going to now deliver this experience?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. And IDN primarily works with large corporations.
Sure.
And large organizations. And typically they already have a relationship with an AV integrator.
Got
so that's a natural kind of partnership for us that you know, the integrator puts everything in together in terms of functionality, and we kind of are the glue between the end user and the integrator. So that's a very nicely working relationship.
Well, that's great. So if an integrator went in and they hear IDN's in the doing some design thinking, they need not worry that you're in there trying to displace them, but you're there more to help them deliver something even better than what it was before.
Yeah, and it also changes the business from the AV integrator's perspective. So the buyer on the client side can be totally different than what the AV integrator is used to. It's not necessarily the IT organization anymore. It may be the strategy officer. It may be the CEO himself or herself at the client organization. Since if we talk about design thinking and producing experiences, it can be very transformative to the organization. And if we do a project well with an AV integrator, that generally generates additional projects as well. So people around that organization look at it and, how come we didn't do that before? So it is a very kind of a nice way to work with the AV integrators to identify new business opportunities and growth as well.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I mean, what you said really hits a nerve with me because I wrote something a long time ago for Commercial Integrator. The article was, why are we talking to IT guys? It wasn't that I didn't understand the importance of the IT department in what we do, especially in knowing the technical capabilities, knowing, you know, things like network bandwidth that we may be affecting. And I know that those are going to be technical gatekeepers that have to sign off on things as pieces of hardware and equipment go on to their network and into their facility. But more my point was that AV systems in general are about communication, you know, and why aren't we talking to more, you know, marketing folks or like you said, more executives who are driving culture or communication within a company, who really get the style behind AT, that the style matters, right? Like how we communicate matters. This user experience matters. They may be able to accomplish the same exact goals with, you know, 18 pieces of disparate hardware, but nobody's going to like using it. It's not going to have the same feel, and it's not going to have the same effect or impact on the organization.
Yeah, and what is nice also in this that, you know, everything that, you know, we can do something that is very much employee-facing.
Uh-huh.
But when you use this design thinking principle, it becomes very quickly customer-facing. So the organization kind of changes also that what the client organization is doing is it's actually better products and better services. So that kind of, again, expands the business opportunities to client-facing projects, which is obviously even better growth opportunity for AV integrators.
Sure. Well, we're talking about, you know, increased opportunities or you know, trends in the market where we're having more and more opportunity as, you know, as AV companies and as software companies and partnering with companies like IDEON. You and I had an interesting conversation just as a preliminary a couple of days ago when we were talking about the VR side of the business. And, you know, a lot of folks in AV, at least from the ones I talked to, and maybe not all of them, but, you know, they really see VR as something that's a personal device that doesn't really translate into a huge market opportunity for, you know, for integrators. You know, somebody's going to buy an HTC Vive, it connects to their personal device, it's a personal headset, you know, more of a consumer-facing or consumer-based technology. And, you know, you had some ideas on how that really creates a lot more opportunity in the commercial space from like a community VR environment. Can we talk about that a little bit? Or
yeah, it obviously when we talk about virtual reality in general, that means that the user or a group of users can transform themselves to something totally different than where they are in the real life. And I already mentioned education and training as examples.
Sure.
And virtual reality is not just having this kind of, you know, funny thing that is hanging on your head. It's also the space around you. So being able to mimic, for example, field situations,
sure,
or especially hazardous kind of environments. Whereas, as you know, one thing that I wanted to point out is the importance, for example, importance of audio, for example, in virtual reality. So there are lots of research already published where the role of audio is surprisingly important in virtual reality. That kind of brings all the audio experts from AV industry back 20 years. So, hey, finally some, you know, new applications for audio. So, but anyways, that kind of proves to you that even though virtual reality is a bit of in a hype curve still, sure, especially corporations are ready to see what are the capabilities of the technology. And it brings together a lot of technologies that the AV integrators are already familiar with. And they definitely have a kind of an edge over people that who are coming from the tech world, that how that integration happens.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I mean if you've been building projection based environments with gesture tracking or any kind of voice interface or 3D audio or any of those things, and you've already been doing those, you know, the HTC guys aren't going to deploy four of their techs that make a Vive to go in and build a room like that, right? I mean, they're just not going to have the know-how or the experience to put it together without a lot of research and work.
Yeah, and it can be, I don't know if you or any of the listeners are still familiar with Star Trek, but they used to have this holodeck idea, and that's what virtual reality is very much in the corporate environment. So you have this space which is equipped with all the latest and greatest AV equipment that then modifies into, changes into, then transforms into the use that the end user is looking for.
Yeah, you know, I saw an interesting one, and one of the shows I really like going to, and I don't think a lot of AV people go to it, but I'm going to throw it out there again, and we'll see if I see any of them there next time, is Seagraph. And Seagraph is kind of like a computer animator, computer content generation show. And, you know, NVIDIA's there heavy, and some of the AV folks show up. Christy sponsored last year. They were here in LA and were doing some things. And one of the things that Christy had there was a 3D visualization of a car. And so you would put on the glasses, you would look at this screen. It was a 3D, you know, image of a vehicle, but you actually had this tactile response tool. So you would push this drill in your hand, and you would then try to put the drill to a bolt and be able to pull the trigger. And if you hit something that was solid on the car in the 3D space, even though the car wasn't there, the drill wouldn't move.
Yeah.
It wouldn't move until you lined it up with the opening that it needed to go through. You know, it wasn't a physical opening. It was a virtual opening that had to be navigated in order to get that down to the bolt and pull the trigger. And so kind of what you said with this tactile environment, there seems to be a huge opportunity for something in that, where you may train somebody how to fix something or how to manipulate something in real space that isn't actually even there. You don't have to bring it into the room.
I totally agree. And it can also be, I mentioned big data visualization as another example. So just last week, we were at the event at Stanford University, and there were probably around 10 other kind of exhibitors also with virtual reality kind of equipment. And we showcased big data in that event. And it was amazing to see, and these were mostly corporate users that were the audience. It was amazing to see that they now with virtual reality had an opportunity to be inside the data they were looking at. So it's no longer a computer screen that they are watching, and the big data can have hundreds of thousands or millions of data points,
sure,
which on a computer screen becomes a little bit complicated to manage. Whereas in virtual reality, you are inside of it. Then with the gestures, as you mentioned, you can organize it, you can group it, you can filter it, you can pinpoint even specific data points and you know, shortlist them or whatever you want to do with that. The user experience is so different from the computer screen that these people were, you know, frankly amazed how easy and how intuitive it is.
Yeah, it's like, it reminds me when you're talking like that, it's like Dark Knight when he was going through all that cell phone data and was actually able to start getting images of rooms based on, you know, where all these cell phones were pinging across the nation, right, and start to get ideas of where people might be at.
Yeah, it's funny, since now that we are talking about it, it all sounds so science sci-fi, right?
Yeah,
but it's not. It's there even today, and if you look at the cost versus benefits here, I like the numbers very much, and so should the AV industry as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you're articulating or able to articulate what we all know, is that there's this opportunity out there, and that we have tools and technologies to do it, but sometimes we just need to know, I guess, the right partner to call to help to bridge that gap.
I would say so. And it is also bringing in new types of people and new types of groups within the organizations, as I mentioned.
Yeah.
So this is more collaborative effort than maybe ever before. Mm-hmm. But I think the AV integrators have all the tools and relationships needed in order to be a very integral part of this new kind of ecosystem, if you will.
I think one of the other advantages too of being able to widen that net is, you know, many times in AV, if you're selling AV hardware and that's all you're selling and you're not bringing in these other folks and talking about total experience, you know, a lot of times your new hardware is competing in the budget against, you know, a PC upgrade or new keyboards or, you know, the customer service department or whatever it happens to be. And when you can get this out of the IT bucket, this isn't a hardware purchase. This is an experience we're building at the company. You know, those dollars all of a sudden from those other departments can really help, you know, fuel these projects forward as opposed to being stuck in the hardware budget every year.
Yeah, and true. And also another business opportunity it creates is on the services side.
Yep.
So once you have this in place, it's not just, you know, a one-off delivery and off you go. There's a kind of part where you are able to do recurring revenue and services to the same client.
Yep, recurring revenue, software, these are all things we hear about, right? And yes. And things we know we need to drive our business forward. So if you were, as kind of a wrap up, if one of us, if an AV integrator or one of us out in the marketplace were talking to an end user and they were defining a problem that they had to us, what would we be listening for as, you know, maybe a keyword or a spark of some kind to say, you know what, maybe we should call Timo at IDN because I think these guys have a larger issue that we could work together on. What are those typical kind of problems or indicators that you hear out there where people can really utilize your services?
Yeah, I think number one is that if someone ever mentioned that the systems are not talking to each other or something like that, that's a pretty good indication that something needs to be done. And as you know, that's a very common challenge in the
industry.
And the other part is that the user experience, which you already kind of mentioned. So those are two pretty good indications that when those kind of things come up, that's a good start.
Well, great. Well, hey, Timo, if people want to learn more about IDN, where do they go?
Our website is IDN.com. That is IDEAN.com. And obviously, through you, they can probably find my phone number and email address as well.
Okay. Well, perfect. Well, hey, I really appreciate you jumping in with me on what is a new podcast. A lot of guys are scared if they haven't heard one before, but you were you came in head first, and I really appreciate that. And I wish you guys a lot of luck. I'm excited to see IDN and AV Integrator case studies hitting the trade publication soon to show what you guys are able to do together.
I look forward to that as well. And obviously, from my past, we have a really good relationship with all the AV integrators. So looking really forward to working with them again.
Great. Thanks, Timo.
Thank you, Mark.
All right.